Alan, does this show make you feel good?
This show makes me feel good.
That was all right. You did like a music thing there.
Yeah, it was like a little song.
With the tunes. Yeah, yeah. What was your major and is your major in college? I don't know terms for school things. You were in college and now you're in the other college, right?
Yes, correct.
Oh, how's it going? How's it schooling?
Please don't. I'm taking a physics class that's really bad right now. I don't like it, but I'm going to do fine. I'm feeling better about it sometimes. Other times I feel hopeless. That's college. I have a lot of thoughts on college. That's why I don't want to get started on this. On like the education system, the like expense of it, the purpose of it, all of it comes into question in my head basically daily.
Well, I think the school system, the American school system, is fantastic, and maybe we should toss out our challenge and instead just have a conversation about that, and if you can convince me that the American school system is bad, you win, and if you can't, I win.
I did it. I already won, because everyone knows it's bad. Wow, give me the garnets.
Well, what did we actually have prepared this week, Alan?
Well, I'm glad you asked. we're playing a game, as we always do. Here in the Garnet Wager Studios in sunny Sunnyvale, California, and it's called the Question Game. I'm going to read the rules of the Question Game to people now.
Okay.
We are going to have a third party provide us with some locations, and once we have a location, we have a scene. This is an improv game for people who don't know. It's like improvised acting, improvised storytelling. Now, the point of the question game is that once we have a setting, we begin the scene, and we can only speak to each other in questions. So we can only use interrogatory phrases and end our sentences with questions. And that's the game, because it's actually pretty hard after a couple of questions to keep coming up with ones that make sense in context. Mm-hmm. Like they all have to be somewhat logical, highly logical, as
indeed
the Star Trek man would say. Who do we enlist?
So we enlisted a co-host of Bottle Crow Reborn, which is a Dota 2 podcast that I also host. This is Nick, a good friend of mine, who will be providing us with the location. Also, I just checked on my Google, the one that I own. And Sunnyvale, California is like 10 hours away. That's far away.
Try Sunnydale, California.
Let's try that. Sunnydale. Also a suburb of San Francisco. Also about 10 hours away.
Also, I didn't think that was
actually
a real place.
Actually really close to Sunnyvale.
Sunnydale is the town from Buffy the Vampire Slayer. What are you doing?
It appears to be a specific sub, like a neighborhood or a district within San Francisco itself. Not actually a proper standalone city, village, or other, you know, township.
It's the place from Buffy.
I'm wasting a lot of time. Let me go ahead and send.
It's the place from Buffy. Can we do a Buffy the Vampire Slayer podcast next?
No.
Okay. All right. Fair enough.
We'll talk about it. Oh, Jesus Christ. I just got the location from Nick. Okay. We are on the set of The Godfather, The Godfather.
Okay. From here on out, we have to only speak in questions starting now.
Wait, who goes first? No, seriously, who goes first? We have to answer that question.
Are you asking me this in the context of the game?
Alan, we can't play the game if we don't fucking settle this.
Okay, good. I was worried, because I was like, if we're playing the game, then I have to think of a question. I will go first.
Okay.
We're on the set of The Godfather?
Yes.
I win.
Okay, just for that, you lose. I'm going to pick your homework now.
No!
Shit lord.
Wait until you realize what homework I picked for you. You'll never guess it. All right, let's start over. Let's start fresh. You go first this time.
Okay.
Same setting.
Wait, what?
We didn't realize that wasn't a real round. That was a joke round.
Good. I'm glad. All right, are you ready to go?
I don't know. Are you ready to go?
I don't know. I already fucked it up. I lose. I can't actually do it.
You just breathe. It's improv. You just breathe.
I can't do it. I try too much to make it natural dialogue. That's my instinct.
Mm-hmm.
It's fine. I lose. It's fine.
Okay. Can I have another setting?
But I already lost, though.
Yeah, so can we have it? Oh, is that the game?
Yeah.
That's the game. Wait.
It was can a I bad just, one this week. What do you want from
can
me?
I get, well, can I think of one off the top of my head so people can actually hear this game played out correctly, please?
Sure, sure.
Okay, we're going to do the top of Mount Everest.
Okay.
It's cold up here, isn't it?
I forgot my jacket. I can't do this game. I can't think of questions. I'm not a question asker.
Oh my god, this is the new Garnet Wager. Is that when we I have to teach you how to do improv.
I can't do questions. I don't ask questions.
You don't ask questions?
I'm a podcaster. My main job is to supply people with information, which means I can't ask questions. That's leaving open-ended things, and there's no one to answer because you can't answer questions. You're just going to ask another question right now.
What do you mean I'm going to ask a question right now?
That's exactly what I mean, Alan. See, this is what I'm talking about. It's always like this with you.
When is it always like this?
Like, how long have we been doing this show, Alan?
Have we been doing this show for 6 months at this point?
How long do you think we've been doing this show?
Have we been doing this show inside of Mount Everest?
What even counts as recording this show?
Is this microphone hooked up to anything?
Well, did you plug it in?
Is there a plug for me to plug it into?
I did the best I could, Alan. I did the best I
could. That was very good! What do you mean you did the best you could? That was great!
That was bad.
That was super good.
It doesn't matter. I've lost like 7 times already.
Oh my god. I want you to have a chance. I want you to have a fair chance.
It's fine. It's fine. You know what? We played a fighting game. You didn't have a fair chance. It's fine.
Wow. There's the shade. I'm fine. I love it when Six gets mean, y'all. That's my favorite thing. Can you get more mean on the podcast?
I mean, yes, I totally can.
That was part of the game,
but the game's already over. As I say, I've already lost like 4 times.
No, come on. I thought you loved the game?
We already played. Why are we doing this? Just give me homework.
You just did it. You did it right there. I think, didn't you just do it?
I sort of did, but like, also, just give me homework. This is terrible content.
This is the best content. I brought this game to the field because... Six, why did I bring this game to the field?
It feels like you brought this game to the field because you knew about my limitations as like an artist and a speaker, but I'm not sure. I don't know.
Do I not consistently tell you that you are better than your limits as a podcaster?
Do I ever believe you?
Do I ever stop telling you that?
At what point does telling me just sort of become the empty act of telling me, though?
Do you not realize by now that me telling you makes me feel good?
Hey, you, I don't like your girlfriend.
That was totally your match. That was your round to win, by the way. That was I know,
but I didn't want to win it.
Okay, well then fine. I win the challenge. Your homework is you have to go take an improv class. Ha!
I can't do that.
Okay, your homework is you have to go... you have to watch a whole movie.
Okay, what movie?
Oh, God.
Is that a movie? It's probably a movie.
For sure. Let's see. Comfort Zone. Do you like crime films?
Oh, God is a 1977 American comedy film starring George Burns and John Denver.
My man.
What was your question?
I said, what kind of films do you like?
None.
Well, then watching a film inherently gets you out of your comfort zone.
That's true. I don't like watching films.
Oh, you should watch In Bruges.
I don't know that I know this film.
Yeah, it's a fun one. Did you see Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri?
God, no.
Okay.
I mean, no.
If you haven't seen... if it's that guy, and in 2008 he actually made a good movie that's not kind of racist, called In Bruges. It's very funny. It's very beautiful.
Okay.
It has Colin Farrell.
It's a bad name.
It's not a great name. Ralph Fiennes, who's Voldemort from Harry Potter. And you got Brendan Gleeson, and they go on like a fun British crime. Or it's actually, they go to like France. They go to Belgium. That's where the city of Bruges is.
Oh, that kind of Bruges. Okay.
Bruges.
I was thinking like Brug, which is like a kind of champagne.
Isn't that also a type of vampire?
No, that's not spelled like that. I think you're thinking of Bruja, which is like witch, maybe? Anyway, this is bad content. All right, that is my homework.
Excellent.
Hit, DJ, hit that music.
Ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-da.
The Garnet Wager is a game where two players compete in challenges while watching episodes of The Genius. Challenges occur once per podcast, and the winner receives a quantity of garnets, depending on the challenge, and can assign media homework for that episode. The loser must report back on that media at the end of the episode. If they liked it, the winner receives an additional garnet. Garnets may also be wagered in various bets according to the whims of the players. Garnets are not obtained automatically. When you successfully win a garnet, you have 5 minutes to claim that garnet or becomes available for your opponent to claim. The first person to say Jinho after 5 minutes have elapsed receives the garnet, so long as they inform their opponent of the acquisition at the end of the episode. This is the Garnet Wager. Begin.
And welcome back to the Garnet Wager, part two, zone
book two, level two,
second stage
turbine blade.
I'm not a Coheed and Cambria fan.
It's a different podcast. Not yet, at least.
I have listened to enough of that podcast to know I am not going to be a Coheed and Cambria fan.
Oh, that's unfortunate. But favorite House Atlantic. No, that's not what we're here to discuss. Six.
What are we here to discuss?
Well, I'm glad you asked. We're here to discuss Kong's Dilemma, the 8th episode of The Genius?
Oh, The Genius, you mean Claudio.
Oh my god, no, I mean the writer. I mean Ryder, the writer. You'll get to that.
Yeah.
So, Kong's Dilemma, it's the 8th episode of The Genius Season 1. We have 6 competitors left, 6 players, and we're playing Kong's Dilemma. Do you want to just start with general impressions of the episode?
Yeah. This is probably my second favorite episode so far.
Okay.
I like this episode a lot. There's a lot of good like mind games and social maneuvering, and the DM is, I think, the most compelling DM so far, just cuz the DM feels like a main match.
It has enough rules to be a main match. Yeah, definitely.
And also, like, it's not just the two people doing mind games. Like, other people get involved in a way that feels very main matchy.
Right. You know? Everyone has a part to play in that DM also. And they even form teams. Or kind of. They form one team against everyone else in a way that feels
or
very
do they?
Main game. Well, kind of, with the betrayals and whatnot.
So, as we usually do, let's talk about what happened when everyone came in the door. So the first people in the door this week are Sungyu and Jinho. And Jinho, like, just basically drops to a knee and proposes to Sungyu right here. He's like, listen, it should really be you and me in the finals. This week, let's work together, and maybe we can include Songmin. We'll see. And also, like, hey, none of the women are worth worrying about. Which is like, whoa, buddy.
Whoa! You can't be flirty and sexist at the same time. That's illegal.
I mean, you know, if he's gay, he can be. That's fine.
Okay.
I mean, like, sexism is still bad, even if you're gay. But, like, that doesn't make it a contradiction, necessarily.
That's fair. Okay.
But Sungyu, good boy Sungyu, is like, I mean, Kyungran's pretty smart. I feel like you're being a little unfair here.
Kyungran's, like, gonna win, bud.
I hope so. I don't know. There's some.
I hope so. Thank you. I'll take that.
This episode was really made me think some stuff about, like, because I feel like for the last couple of episodes, we've both felt pretty strongly. It's like, okay, Kyung-ran's going to win, and it's sort of a race to who gets second to Kyung-ran. And I'm starting to wonder if we're maybe giving her a little too much credit. She's great, but like, I mean, in this game, she kind of just was along for the ride for both the main match and the DM.
Right. Just real quickly before I forget, do we want to talk about how I refuse to be Jinho'd and I'm going to claim my garnets right now?
Right. Thank you. Yeah, so you can claim your garnets. It's going to be 15 for that challenge, we decided.
Yum, yum, yum.
So we did talk off the air, and we did decide about two changes to rules. One is that Jinho's are now blockable. If someone Jinho's you within, like, we're going to say, like, 30 seconds, but understand that what we really mean is, like, sort of within the same, like, thought, within a reasonable amount of time, if you catch a person Jinho-ing, you can block it, and garnets are distributed as regular, as though they were claimed. And the other change we're making is for homework, it's no longer going to be, as we talked about, it's not going to be a one garnet reward, because that's nothing, our economy is destroyed. Instead, it's going to be a scale of 0 to 5 garnets.
It's like in World War II, post-World War II Germany, how money lost all value, so like kids were just like playing with money in the streets, like throwing paper currency around. It's that.
Welcome to the Deutschmark of podcasts, is what we're saying.
It says that on the New York Times recommendation of our podcast. I had a customer today that was listening to This American Life. It was weird. It was weirdly surreal. She was like talking about it and was like, "Have you heard a podcast?" And I was like, "No, tell me more."
Oh boy.
Sorry. But yeah, so we have new rules. And then in case people just forget, like, fundamentally what a Jinho is, in the first 5 minutes of the episode discussion, the person who loses the game at the beginning can say the word Jinho in context of the conversation. After the first 5 minutes, if they say that and the other person doesn't counter it, then they get those garnets steel style.
Well, technically either side can Jinho. Like, if you had a challenge where I won, but you still got some garnets, let's say I got 20 and you got 10, you could say, I could claim my garnets, but that'll remind 6 to claim theirs, so I'm gonna hold off and go for a Jinho, which is a risky play, but could pay off.
I like it. I like it. I hope we're not confusing people.
I mean, I think actually you and I might be more, well, not me, because I,
'cause you're brilliant,
built these rules. 'Cause I built these rules. But, and I confirmed them with you. You assented to all of these. It's just like, you don't hear these rules very often. The listener hears them every single episode.
Oh, true. And your little, hey, how you doing? I don't like cheese and pizza. That whole
I mean, if you mean my, as in my audio file, I don't know who that mysterious voice is, but.
I don't know. And as a matter of fact, the, undying question, whose man's is this?
Fuck this.
Bless this mess. Let's get into it.
Okay. Well, back to everybody filing the door. We get next in is Songmin, and Songmin, goes up to Sungyu and hugs him.
Aww, friends.
And then immediately insults him.
Aww.
Cause he's like, oh, you know, I've been watching, actually, have you seen, like, everybody's crazy about The Genius, and they're like, this great show about Sungyu's crude survival. And Sungyu's like, crude? Come on, man. This is, rough.
Extremely villainous thing to say.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of villainous things to say, then we go on to Jinho, who's explaining why he sent Pung to the DM, and he said, I was worried I wouldn't be able to get any more allies, so I killed off Pung. That's pretty villainous, I would say.
It's weird. He also grew a goatee this episode and started stroking it, and he had a pet cat the whole time that he was petting. It's weird. It's almost like Jinho is becoming the villain of the show.
Why did you kill off? You killed off Pung because you were worried you weren't able to get more allies. Why did you kill off Gura? He outlived his usefulness.
Dun dun dun. I do love. I love a good anime villain. And Jinho is totally... Well, it's weird. Jinho, in this moment, is kind of like that fun villain. Villainous. It's like a very villainous thing to say. I definitely would say that Sungyu comes out of this episode as our new villain.
Huh. We'll have to talk about that.
Yeah. All right, cool. But first, the last line before I always adore the last line before they cut to the credits. Songman is telling everyone, all right, guys, I have a new strategy. What's your strategy? Take Jin-Ho down.
It's just like a declaration of war. And it's like, all right, well.
Oh, my God.
I guess here we go. Spoilers for the episode. This doesn't come up at all.
Yeah, not in the slightest. There's no, it's just like posturing, basically.
Yeah, basically. Songman, posturing? What?
Couldn't be. This is, I was going to briefly mention this because we're probably not going to talk about it much during the episode. Songman is like not on his extra A game this episode.
What?
Okay, well, he's like playing, like he's doing stuff, but he isn't like a cartoon character this episode that much.
Yeah, not as much. He's most, well, there are some things. There are a few things. I think it's not as much, but he certainly has some cartoony moves that we'll talk about. He certainly has some great overacting that we'll get into.
Oh, wait, he can't turn that off.
Scenery is toothed. So actually, we had a moment here that had me, so do you remember, I don't remember how many games ago it was. Was it like the scamming horse race where Sungyu, like, flirted with the dealer?
Yeah, I think it was the flirting horse race.
And so now Sungyu again is sort of like there's a quiet moment where they're standing around, you know, the table in the main hall, and Sungyu's like, "Oh, did you change your hair?" And she sort of like quickly looks down. And this caused me to turn to the Genius fan community. Specifically from the Genius Online, those folks that I've promoted before. And I was like, okay, y'all, what is the deal with this dealer? Like, what do we even call her? Because clearly Sungyu is going to keep flirting with her. What's going on?
Because, yeah, it's the same one.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So apparently this dealer is Dealer Hong. So we have a name for her now. That's her last name. It's Hong. So
H-O-N?
Her family name, I guess. H-O-N-G. Hong.
Okay. Gotcha.
Mm-hmm. So just keep that in mind. And, I got her full name. I'm not going to share it now because I feel like part of the identity of the hosts is them, like, not hiding, but like trying to focus on the identity as host, right?
Yeah.
It's like, it's almost like hostess or like host or dealer, excuse me, is dealer is like your first name almost. It's like, okay, well, I'm going to respect that. You can be Dealer Hong. I'm not going to go further into it than that.
Right, you want to preserve, like, I don't actually want to know who's under the bandages. It's probably you, I figured. This is the twist of the show, because you're doing the, theoretically doing the voice. It sounds like you.
Yeah, I can, yeah.
The one in the show and the one in our show. It's kind of like metatext. But, like, it's cool not knowing who that is. I don't want to know anything about the secrets of, like, the Genius House or the people that run it or the dealers. Let's keep that air of mystery a little bit.
Yeah, I want to respect the fiction as much as they present it.
Exactly.
So, and I feel like, yeah, the dealers and the bandage man are all things that are just like, no, these are, like, intentionally kind of vague and mysterious and let them stay that way. It's almost like dealers are a step above, like, stagehands in a play where they're, like, dressed all in black and moving scenery around, and you're supposed to just be like, okay, I don't see them. You're supposed to just sort of imagine they're not there.
Right, it ruins the magic. Oh my God, I was at a concert recently, and it was the first time I was ever, like, in the front, like, touching the stage. And the whole time I could see the lighting guy in the back, and I was like, the magic is gone. It's just this dude in a black sweater. Like, hey guys, I'm the lighting guy. I hit a button every 30 seconds. Like, first of all, shout out to that guy. I hope he gets paid well. Second, respect the dealers.
Indeed. Indeed. So our main match is Kong's Dilemma.
Apparently not about Donkey Kong, unfortunately.
Not about Donkey Kong, unfortunately. Or maybe it is in some metaphorical way we just weren't able to put together because we're not smart enough.
It's beans!
Yes, I believe Kong means bean in Korean.
I learned a lot of Korean this episode. I have notes.
I didn't. I just sort of let it wash over me.
It's called Kong's Dilemma because of the really cool hook of this game, which is that it is a balance. Like, now that there's only six players left, A, they can still establish teams, like one-on-one teams. And B, they now have to manage, like, playing for yourself to win versus playing to keep your team
in first place.
Mm-hmm.
And that conflict is, I believe, the titular Kong's dilemma.
Indeed. So, I will explain the rules. Players are divided into two teams of three, white and red. Their placement is decided via random drawing. There will be five rounds of play. Whenever one team gets three wins, the game is over. Every player has 10 Kongs according to their team color in a personal locker, so each white player will have 10 white Kongs, each red player will have 10 red Kongs. All lockers are locked, and you only have the key to open your own. Enter the room one at a time, once per turn, then take out as many Kongs as you like and put them in the container in the center of the room. At the end of the turn, the container in the center of the room is counted, and the team with the most Kongs will win that round. However, only the losing team's Kongs will be revealed each round, not the winner's. The player on the winning team with the most Kongs left wins the game. The player on the losing team with the least Kongs left loses the game. Winning team members get garnets according to how many Kongs they have left.
So the conflict again becomes, if I put all, we could just put all of our Kongs into the thing, but, and we would probably win the game, but we don't know that for sure. And also, we would have nothing to play with afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a really fun, sort of like the, preserving the self versus greater good, game. And I like that a lot about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think the social dynamics are inherently strong. Including a, I don't know if it was planned or unplanned, the social dynamic of the fact that Jinho has had the nickname Kong for some time now, and immediately we get Yunji being like, so hang on, why does everyone call Jinho Kong? And Jinho, like, really circuitously explains, because they're making fun of me.
Like, it means bean, but it's all, like, small person, and, like, I'm...
It kind of sounds like my name, and also they wanted to make me angry, and it's like, okay, yeah, we get it. They're making fun of you. They're bullying you. Say they're bullying you.
Just say, yeah. There is, oh my god, I just realized I watched this in a behind the scenes, not in the actual episode. I watched one of the behind the scenes today.
How was that?
It was good. It was like 90 seconds long. It was just, extended cut of everybody at the beginning, like when they're all just eating like the cheese plate and having snacks. Someone's just like, man, I remember Jinho when I saw him on TV when I was a kid. He was way skinnier back then. You got fat, dude. He's like, guys, I stopped playing and Jeez. I had to, like, I gained a little weight. Like, please chill. It's like very friendly. It's like,
he looks so good though.
He does. No, it was like, he was very thin when he was like in the heat of his StarCraft career.
That makes sense. Yeah.
But I don't think he's like overweight right now. It's just like, oh, like it's kind of a fun thing to make fun of, I guess, between adults. To be like, oh, you put on some pounds after your big career then, didn't you, big guy? Even though he's the smallest boy.
He had such a hard time this episode. There's this, you know, as they're standing around the cheese plates and talking about strategy, and they're just being like, oh, I don't know, like, what should we do with Kongs? What's the best strategy? How do you handle Kongs? I wonder if you have too many Kongs. And every time someone says Kong, Jinho just twitches.
Like, I'm being broken.
And Sungi just has to, like, quietly give him a hug. Like, it's okay. Oh, they're not making fun of you.
Sungi's that friend you really want. You really want to have when you need it. We'll talk about it. another thing about this is like, they split the teams up, and they make the smart choice to split everybody up randomly, or through like drawing lots basically. And, everybody's hoping that they get the right team balance. Like, Kyungra and Sungwan obviously want to be on the same team, and, Sungyu wants to be, not on Yunji's team, I guess. Mm-hmm. Why is that? He doesn't think she's good?
Remember, it's the thing where last time he was like, is she an Aries? I don't get along with Aries.
Oh,
He has just decided that he and Yunji do not get along. And in deciding that, he has made it true, right?
Yeah, by, she is not nice. Or no, I guess that's Yuram later who says the really mean thing. But yeah, Yunji, and them don't get, it is totally what you're saying. Like, they don't get along because, he thought that they wouldn't for a while.
Mm-hmm.
So he's like, no, please, anyone but her. And then, of course, they get matched immediately. And he's just like, we're going to lose. Yes. We've already lost.
Like game's over. All right. Goodbye. Our teams are white is Jinho, Yurim, and Songmin. Red is Sungyu, Yunji, and Kyungran.
Two things I immediately like. One, I love Songmin and Kyungran not being on the same team because that means we get some spiciness on both sides. Mm-hmm. Second thing, they make a joke about, like, what if it was three guys versus three girls? And then they're like, no, that would be a terrible idea. Mm-hmm. The girls would win. What are you doing? That's like the combination of Kyungran with her cleverness and then Yunji just like being very coy about things. That's a deadly team.
I don't know if that's true, though. I feel like Kyungran was really like the thing about both Yunji and Yurim is they're both players who tend to take kind of a backseat.
Right, but to their benefit sometimes.
Sure, but I don't think in this game that would work.
Not with this few people and not with this type of game specifically, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, like, this game, the way it plays out, is primarily played by Sungyu, Songmin, and Jinho.
Yeah, I was going to say that. This is, if I have any minor complaint about Kong's Dilemma, it's that a lot of it is most of us are sitting in a room just thinking and sweating over things, and then, like, two of us are going to make deals. Like, one from each team or two from each team, and that's it. That's the whole game.
That's a good point. That's a good point. There's really an intense focus in a way that, like, I mean, Yurim has a few moments, but, like, Yunji doesn't, like, is just sort of going with the flow this whole game, even Kyungran. And it's like, we know those aren't flaws with these players. These players have done amazing things, but mostly it's just like the game doesn't leave room for that many people to make big moves.
There aren't, it's just a space thing, like a space and time thing, and the framing of this game doesn't give everybody equal play time.
Mm-hmm. So my prediction ahead of time was that the red team was going to win and white was going to lose. And my logic was because white team actually, like, to its detriment, the white team has too many ambitious players.
The white team does?
Yeah. So if you think about, like, the dynamics of the team makeup, like, Sungyu has shown a willingness to, like, to spend garnets in competitions in order to get an advantage, right?
Mm-hmm.
Whereas you take someone like Jinho or Songmin, they're gonna get kind of greedy, and they're gonna hold on to their Kongs in this case because Kongs become garnets, and they're gonna try and win without putting themselves too much on the line, and it's gonna cost them.
This was one of the games where I actually felt the rules were simple enough that I liked understanding, like the two steps ahead that each person was making. Like Songmin in particular had, I think, a moment in like the third or fourth round where he told Sungyu basically, hey, we are going to put down this much. We're going to end up having a total of eight. How much are you guys going to put down? And they're like, oh, we're going to put down seven. And he's like, put down more than eight and you guys will win. Mm-hmm. And it's like his strategy is basically to tell them the truth in a way that makes them doubt themselves so much that they fuck themselves over. Like sowing dissent and discord in the other team. And I loved that. It's just, again, it's a shame that it's only like two or three players doing that stuff, doing the talking, but it works. Like it goes back and forth. And like you said, like you, predicted. Well, you said what? You said the white team is going to win?
I said the white team is going to lose. Yeah.
The red team wins all three rounds. Is that correct?
The red team wins three rounds, but there are four rounds played. White does win one.
But the red team wins.
Mm-hmm.
Right, so it ends up not only being a game of minimizing risks, but maximizing betrayals of the other team.
Mm-hmm.
I loved that. I loved seeing them like, hey, I'm going to tell you exactly the truth. And they're like, all right, cool. And then they turn back to their team and they're like, he lied to us. And then they play around assuming it's a lie and then things just blow up in their faces.
Mm-hmm.
It's so fun to watch.
So we start off with a conversation. White team is like sort of figuring things out. And they're like, okay, well, we need to, like, you know, as happens in basically every team. It's like, okay, well, Songmin, go over, talk to the other team, see what they're thinking.
Yeah.
And there's a really sweet moment, actually, that alludes to sort of some of the past successes they've had together, where Red team's all gathered together, and Songmin steps into the room, and Kyungran looks up and kind of gives a little laugh and is like, why am I so glad to see you?
Yeah, that was such a nice line.
It was so sweet. It's like, tactically, you showing up is a bad thing, and we're in trouble, but it's just nice to see you. It's like, that's really sweet.
It melted my heart a little bit. I was like, oh, friends. I'm a sucker for that stuff. Like, people are not often nice in this game, like outwardly very nice to each other, unless it is either to posture or just, like, out of politeness.
Yeah.
But this felt like a genuine, like, reaching across the aisle, like, hey, nice to see you. I'm glad you're here. And I'm like, aw.
Yeah, it felt really good to see. And it I don't know, it's the moments like that, little touches like that, that make me like this cast so much more, because even when they're at, like, their, I won't say nastiest, but, like, most mercenary, perhaps, it's like, but you're still gonna get these moments of, like, friendship and humanity that are just like, aw, alright, well, this is great.
There was a level of chaos when the house was really packed of, like, quick, send this guy over here, quick, have this guy lie to this guy, and then do this, it's like three or four things happening at once. They sort of have a line in the middle of this episode where they're like, we can't do secret meetings anymore. There aren't enough people. Like, anyone can hear anyone. There aren't, like, rooms small enough or, like, separate enough that we could do something that no one else would see. Everyone knows where everybody is all the time now.
Yeah.
They still do, like, eavesdrop on each other and, like, listen through the door for as much help as that's worth. But it's just kind of cool. It's like, oh, there's no, like, there's less, like, lying during the deliberations and more, like, it feels like active competition, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So Red Team offers Songmin, like, okay, you work with us, you act as our spy, we'll give you immunity.
Mm-hmm.
And Songmin's like, you're going to need to give me a couple minutes to think about this offer. Which is really reasonable and no one has ever done before on this show.
Actually thought about taking an offer or not?
Oh, well, like, no, people have thought about it, but no one's ever been like, hey, give me a couple of minutes. People are either just like, yes, no, or ah. No one's ever like, give me this many minutes to think about it. And it's like, oh, okay, that's really reasonable. I don't know. I'm surprised we haven't seen that more.
It's usually because there's, like, a strict time limits.
That's true.
And they want to just be like, oh, fine, take the deal. Like, there isn't a lot of time to just consider options. But it is, the game feels like a more measured pace again with fewer players. I like that.
Mm-hmm.
Where does it go from here? I'm trying to, because I have a ton of notes about, like, silly one-off lines, but I don't have, like, the overall game.
Well, basically what happens is so they send, like, so Songmin's like, okay, I'm gonna go talk to the other team. And then, Yunji follows him back. And then Kyungran, and then Sungyu, and now everyone is just in one room. And it's like, what are we doing? So the white team kicks out red team. And it's like, listen, we have to talk, you guys have to get out. And they're like, okay, okay. Songmin shuts the door on them, and then Sungyu listens at the door to hear what their plan is. And then, so it's time, it's like, okay, so white team's plan is to put in four Kongs, right?
Mm-hmm.
And as they're, like, so Yurum goes in to put hers in, Jinho is in the other room, sort of quietly, like, thinking to himself, and Songmin sort of stands and, like turns so his back is to Jinho. And he's like, oh, you know, like, oh, sorry, we've got somebody in there right now. And he starts, like, hand signaling to them. And you're like, oh, he's given away the game. He has, I guess, agreed to be the spy. So he signals to them that they're going to put in four. And so, red team should put in five, right?
Correct.
And then it's Songmin's turn to go in. And he's agreed to put in one Kong, and he does not put in any. So that means the white team loses with three Kongs in the pot. And Jinho immediately knows what's up.
Yeah. It's kind of obvious with this few people. Like, oh, we're
sure. Gonna... Yeah. Yeah. Because he's like, okay, so I know I put my two in. I can't imagine Yurum betraying anyone. I can imagine you betraying basically anyone. So
I can, like, imagine you betraying the dealers if you had to.
Yeah, yeah. It's like, yeah. It's interesting to be reminded that like these are the two that the Jinho occurred between, right?
Yeah, the original Jinho and Songmin and Jinho.
So I imagine Jinho has a certain thought process about how willing Songmin is to get down and dirty, which is not inaccurate, obviously.
The thing I like about this game is like even people if you betray like your team, like you hoard garnets. Or hoard Kongs, that is fucking over your team in a way that is noticeable and actionable to them.
And in some situations, though.
True.
But yeah, it is nice that they were able to catch him and sort of hold him accountable in that one. So Songmin agrees to use mostly his Kongs going forward. Sungyu is apparently leaking information to Jinho. Which is the moment I didn't understand, right?
I'm trying to remember this part exactly. Is it?
He just explains, like, Jinho asks him, like, okay, what did you guys play? And Songmin's like, oh, we played 5. And it just sort of tells him straight up, like, we put in 5 Kongs. And it's like, Songyu has no reason to tell Jinho that I can think of, unless he's playing both sides. Like, there's no way that doing that is beneficial to Red.
It seems like he's both partly playing both sides and probably just trying to gain allies and gain like good graces. But
he shouldn't need them.
He shouldn't need to, but I think maybe he's just playing a long game, you think, even?
Maybe. I mean, I guess he is trying to stay friendly with Jinho, and maybe it's sort of this long social game of like, listen, I can give him information that isn't going to affect the game that much, but can, you know, encourage our relationship and be useful down the line.
Yeah, I think they talk about even like as the credits start to roll, they say something like the reason these two guys made an alliance is because it's to make up for betraying each other like a week ago. Mm-hmm. Like they are totally considering the full season and not just this week, which is something I often forget.
Mm-hmm.
But alas,
I think you are misremembering a fact, but we'll get to it when we get there.
Oh, certainly. We know how this game goes. I don't remember anything.
So round two, White says they're going to put in 9. And Red says they'll put in 0. So Sungyu goes in, and so we get everyone going in to put in their Kongs, or not, as the case may be. And Sungyu goes in and starts asking the dealers about their relationships.
This scene, I messaged you immediately about this. I don't know.
It's true. I think it's just him being like a companionable cishet. Like, wife, that must be hard. I don't know. Like,
yeah, I do think it's that. Like, as I get older, I get more and more tired of this thing that I'll even admit I've done on this podcast before, where I'm like, the boys should kiss. Like, I've like been guilty of doing that, and been accused of doing that like more than once, and I have started to shy away from making any assumptions about somebody's sexuality.
Wait, which boys?
Huh?
Which boys?
Let's not. Please no.
Okay. Sorry. This is how much this shit doesn't occur to me. As I'm like, wait, what?
No. I guess not much on this podcast. Now that I think about it, but like, I definitely like all the boys, and I mentioned like last week or whatever that Sungyu was like flirting with Jinho, and it's like that's cute, but he's obviously not flirting with. He's not actually flirting with Jinho. I don't know these people's lives. I don't know their sexualities. It doesn't matter to me. This is like the least sexual game actually. But this scene is just kind of cute. When we get to watch Sungyu be like, so you guys got girlfriends? And one of them's like, yeah, and the other one's like, I'm happily married. And he's like, damn. And you're like, why'd you say that, Sungyu? Like, you're cute and that's funny, but that's just an odd line. I don't know, I can't look too into it.
I don't know. I think it's just the generic, like, whew, the old ball and chain, eh?
Yeah.
You know, it's just this classic dude humor. And listen, when I say classic, I'm not necessarily judging it to be good or bad. If you made me judge, I know how I would fall on it. But
I feel like more than anything, if you love any type of joke, it's sex humor.
Pretty much. I'm so horny for this one, you guys.
That word has never come out of your mouth. Not sincerely, at least.
Not sincerely. That's true.
I love it.
Yeah, I don't know. I do like that, like, Sungyu seems to be the one who's taking an interest in the dealers as people, and that is nice to see. And maybe there's more of that just gets cut from the show and we don't know, But, like, mostly it's just sort of people being, like, either ignoring that the dealers are there, or, like, Gura making jokes at their expense, or, you know, it's like, hey, come on. They're people, too. They're doing a good job.
They get paid to do this. Come on. It's their job.
They look nice in their suits. They got those little, like,
bow tie.
Like, three-piece suit, but they've got the coat off, so they got, like, the vest with the tie. It's a good look.
I agree.
So, anyway. Jinho's new plan is to have Songmin pretend to sell them out, which Songmin's delighted to do because he's actually selling them out.
I think this is the scene I was talking about earlier, or no?
I don't know. Which one were you at what point?
When he says, hey, we played 8, you should play 9.
Yes. Yes.
Okay. Cool.
I mean, that's a little bit, because at first he's like, hey, look, we're going to play 5. And then he goes back and he's like, okay, so we're going to play 5, right? And Jinho's like, no, let's do 8. And Songmin's like, oh, shit.
I just told them we're going to play 5. Shoot.
Yeah. And so he goes back and he talks to them and he's like, okay, never mind, you need to play 9. If you want to win this, you need to play 9. And right at the door, like, so Songmin's gone, Jinho is gone, Yoram's about to go, and Yoram's just like, I don't like this. There's something not right about this. And Jinho's like, listen, if that's how you feel, if you're confident in your feeling, just put in 1. Because the plan was for Yoram to play 3, Songmin to play 5, and Jinho to play 1. And this would lower it to Jinho 1, Yoram 1, Songmin 5, right?
Correct, yeah.
It turns out that Yoram's feeling was absolutely correct, because White loses with 2 Kongs. Songmin didn't play a single one. But that also means that in one turn, Songmin just pissed off everybody.
Everyone. His team. The other team. His friends. Probably a dealer.
Mm-hmm.
Something is up in Denmark.
There is a good... This is one of those good moments of Songmin being his usual melodramatic self, because he's just like, when it gets announced, he's sort of leaning forward on a table with his hands over his mouth, and this big grin just spreads across his entire face as everyone realizes that he just fucked everyone.
It's like that, like, really... Sorry, go ahead.
Because it's like, okay, he said he was going to play all these Kongs, and that's why we were trusting him, and he didn't. He's been holding on to them, but he also told the other team to play a bunch when they didn't need to. So he really just screwed every single player but himself.
I don't think we should actually watch Survivor, but there's this really famous gif from one of the Survivor series where, like, it's a bunch of the players, like, seeing something really disgusting happen on camera, and they all, like, react by covering their mouths, and then there's just one guy, like, it pans to him, and he's just, like, a slow, devilish grin comes up on his face. And it's like, that's Songmin.
Yep, he's like, pretty
yes,
much.
Yes, my plans.
So we get, like, we really get some good, this is a good period of melodrama of, this is where Songmin turns it on, right? Mm-hmm. Where, like, he goes to talk to Sungyu, and Sungyu shuts the door on him, and he, like, slides to his knees and, like, paws at the door like a dog. Like, oh! And so he runs back to his team, because now Sungyu, he's been working with Sungyu this whole time. Like, before the game started, Sungyu and Songmin were like, okay, we're ride or die. Turns out, Songmin pushed him out of the car and said die. Because he screwed him pretty good. And then he goes back to his own team, and Jinho's like, listen, if I go to the DM, I'm immediately picking Songmin. And Songmin goes, oh, okay, so we just need to win. Got it. Mm-hmm. And Jinho just, like, has to laugh at, like, the audacity of Songmin just being, like flipping allegiance again on a dime.
It's funny that Songmin's the one that does all the betraying in this part.
It's, yeah.
I was just gonna say, considering that Sungyu also does a lot of sneaky stuff towards the end.
He definitely does some stuff. It's
We're gonna disagree, like, on this, and that's fine. I'm ready for it.
We probably are. It just feels like it feels like what happens is Sungyu kind of, with this move from his Sunbai, he kind of loses faith in trusting the rest of the contestants.
Yeah. Well, he turns off, a switch turns off in his brain.
Mm-hmm. And he's like, actually, fuck all these people. Like, again, there's another good Songmin moment of Jinho's like,
incredulous, like, whose side are you on? And Songmei just sort of leans way back in his chair and just sort of shrugs and is like, oh, I don't have one.
No side, baby.
What a motherfucker.
I love it so much.
Oh, so good. So good. So it's 2-1 red team, mm-hmm. and Jinho and Songmin are arguing, and it's like, Jinho's like, they're gonna fake us out this turn. They're gonna try and get us to spend some Kongs, and the next turn they're gonna hit us hard, and they're gonna win. So this turn we need to hold off as well, and hit them hard. And Songmin's like, you're really reading this situation wrong. And he was, because red team all ins on that turn, and wins. Except for they don't all in, do they, Alan?
Well, they think they do.
Mm-hmm. But what happens?
I really, really want to make sure that I don't get this wrong. Is it not that Sungyu doesn't put money in at all, doesn't put anything in at all?
Oh, he puts all but one in.
Oh, he says he's going to put all of them in, and then he leaves one for himself.
Mm-hmm. He leaves just one as a buffer to make sure that he is the winner.
You devilish man. I love it.
So the red team wins, and Jinho was wrong, but the red team was also wrong because they thought everybody was going to go all in even, and Sungyu pulled back at the last second to become the ultimate winner.
Just like Danganronpa.
Mm-hmm.
I'm
exactly.
Sorry. I'm sorry.
Are you? I don't think you are.
Oh my god. No, I'm not at all. Sorry. If there's anything I like doing on the Garnet Wager, it's pressing your buttons just a teensy bit.
Square, square, triangle.
Oh my god.
Gamers!
At me if you're a gamer and then delete your account. Let's get to the DM.
Well, so we should talk about the drama here.
Oh yeah.
As the game ends. So Jinho and Yoram are tied for last. Songmin is not, obviously, because he held on to all of his Kongs and never put in a single one.
Love it.
So Sungyu decides who goes to the DM, and he picks Yoram. And then he's getting ready to give out Token Alive, right?
Mm-hmm.
Save somebody from ZM.
Yeah.
And Yunji is like, listen, come here. I know we have our disagreements. 7 Garnets. I will give you 7 Garnets for a Token of Life. And Sungyu's like, hey, all right. Wow, that's a hell of an offer. I made up my mind. And he walks back and says, I'm giving it to Jinho. And he's just like, fucking.
That's just like line after line where they're like, what's wrong with him? What's this guy doing? Why is he doing this? What happened? What's his logic here?
He just doesn't want you around, I'm afraid. And so then we have a quick shot of everyone, like, being like, oh no, like, I might be the next deathmatch candidate. And, you know, we get, like, Kyungren, like, oh, I really feel like I could have played that a little better. And I'm like, oh, I'm kind of stressed out. And Sungyu goes, like, ah, I might not have been living my life properly. It's like, or no, that's Songmin, excuse me.
Yes.
But Yoram, ever consistent, picks Yunji for the DM based on Garnets.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll get into that shortly. But first, we have to take a break for some homework.
See, I did a different song this time. Would you call that a song?
No, I would like someone being very gently choked.
That's my brand! No, it's not. Please don't at me. Actually, please at me. No, it's it was me trying to do an impression of the character in this movie. He goes, Imbruge! But I didn't want to say the name of it because we haven't told them what it is yet, except we did last segment. I don't know. Yeah, watched In Bruges.
Well, yes, I watched In Bruges. Alan.
What's up?
Will you describe In Bruges and what it's about?
I will.
To the listeners.
In Bruges is a British, I believe, action comedy drama from 2008, directed and written by Martin McDonagh. It is, here's just the IMDb summary, because this is a very good summary. Guilt struck in after a job gone wrong, Hitman Ray and his partner await orders from their ruthless boss in Bruges, Belgium, the last place in the world that Ray wants to be. It reads like the first paragraph of like a kid's novel or something. Or like a children's book where it's just like, this guy's having a no good, horrible, very bad day.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm curious, in general, what did you think of the movie?
So the rules of our homework is that you, so we can pick any work of media, and sometimes we extend the definition of media a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And if they liked it, you know, we get a scale of garnets and stuff, and you have to experience at least half an hour of the work, and I tapped out after 32 minutes.
Okay.
I did not like this movie.
Okay.
Talk
to me about it. Talk me through your process.
And, like, it's one of those situations where, like, I understand that the point of the movie is that everyone is a piece of shit.
Yeah.
But, like, everyone's a piece of shit, and I don't give a fuck about what happens to any of them.
Okay.
So did you like this movie?
Yes. A lot.
Cool. Why don't you talk about what you liked about it, and I'll talk about what I didn't like about it.
I mean... If the goal of this was for me to get you to experience something, I did it. If the goal of it was to get you to go out of your comfort zone, I think I failed horribly, because the thing I like about this movie is the way that its act structure works and the way that the, like, your view of the characters and their story changes over time. So I shouldn't have picked this because you didn't have to finish it.
Mm.
It's simple as that. It definitely... And it's been a little while since I've seen it, so I'm not, like, vividly clear on everything that happens, but mostly, like, the comedy and the action, I think, in the back half is a lot of fun and plays with the tropes of the crime genre in ways that I like a lot without feeling like it's lampooning them. It's very respectful of that, and it manages to carve its own niche within that genre. Like, everybody I know who has seen this one is like, this is Martin McDonagh's best movie, and he hasn't made a better one since.
Hmm.
He has gone on to direct stuff like Seven Psychopaths. He did stuff like Six Shooter a little bit before this. And he also did Three Billboards Outside of Ebbing, Missouri, which is a much worse film. For, like, thematic reasons, but for cinematic reasons, it's pretty good, but that doesn't mean anything. So I'm disappointed. What do you remember what scene you stopped at?
So I think I stopped, so, you know, the hitman had come to Bruges, and they'd done some going around, and he had his first date,
mm-hmm.
and that went kind of, I think it was in the aftermath of that first date, that I stopped.
Okay.
I think that's right. But it's sort of like, so there's a bunch of stuff, I mean, basically it's like, okay, so everyone sucks, everyone's a shitty human,
mm-hmm.
But like not... I guess I just couldn't, like, you can certainly do works about, like, shitty people and have me find them compelling, right?
Mm-hmm.
But, like, I didn't feel like there was a hook. It was just sort of like, the film was just sort of taking my head and pushing it up against a cheese grater. And I was like, no, I don't like this. Like, I don't like these people. I don't think their motivations are, and I mean, like, I can appreciate that Ray is upset that he accidentally killed a kid on a hit. Like, sure, okay, that's fair. But, like, moment to moment, it seemed like all he ever did was antagonize people, usually for no reason. There's a bunch of, like, slurs and stuff in here that I don't love. And, like, again, these are the sorts of people who would be using those slurs. I guess that's fair, but it still rubs me the wrong way to hear them.
That doesn't necessarily make it okay.
And I just... I don't know. I didn't, like, the only person I at all cared about was sort of the other hitman, Ken.
Brandon Gleason's character is the best, yes.
And even him, I didn't care that much. It's sort of like, oh, okay, like, he's here, like, he feels like he's here to be, like, sort of the person in this lifestyle who has it more together than Ray does, and is something like, it felt like almost sort of like an older brother kind of thing.
Yeah.
And it's like, that's kind of neat, but like, if the movie was about him, maybe I would have finished it. And I don't think it was. I don't care about Ray.
It's hard. Have you before, like, previously liked, stories that had unlikable protagonists?
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. I'm having trouble, like, I'm having trouble conjuring some to mind. A lot of anime.
I was gonna say Sword Art Online.
No. I mean, Sword Art Online has some,
You should have said, Alan, no one likes that show. Come on. You had a free.
That's so not true, though. It's too many people like that.
I know.
Yeah. Sword Art Online has a different problem. It's not about him being likable. It's about the artist who wrote it being unlikable and that coming through in his work.
Well, there's a difference between anime protagonists, like, being unlikable because they are shitty or gross or, like, lack the confidence to just fulfill basic roles in fiction.
Mm-hmm.
Shinji Ikari. And then there's, like, this guy is reprehensible. He is doing things. He is performing actions and delivering lines and has, like, the confidence to do that. But I hate him.
You know what? Let's rip this shit from the headlines. This only applies to the very first game in this series.
Mm-hmm.
I think Kratos in the very first God of War is a loathsome character who is compelling.
Wow. Say more about that.
I mean, like, the game knows he's a piece of shit, and the game is about, like, so the game is him doing this job for the gods, like, this sort of, like, divine hit, and sort of, like, you know, like, do this and you'll be granted forgiveness for your crimes, right?
Yeah.
And he does it. And then so Athena appears and she's like, all right, I forgive you. And just sort of like kind of basically shrugs. And he's like, I don't feel any different. He's like, yeah, because you feel guilty because you're a dickhead. Like me saying I forgive you, like I'm a god. I'm still just a person saying I forgive you. That doesn't change shit. You still got to live with the bad shit you did. Anyway, bye. And that's really good, frankly. The game knows that Kratos sucks in the first one and then seems to forget it in subsequent games.
And keeps giving him chances, that's true.
And, like, nothing he does, like, it's shown as, like, his quest was ultimately, like, I guess a good thing to happen because, like, the person he's, the god he's sent after is sort of gone out of control and being destructive. Mm-hmm. But, like, then he takes over for him and is worse. Like, that's the ending of that game is, like, and then Kratos took over God of War, and he was way worse than Ares was.
Yeah.
And it led to some of the greatest, like, the greatest tragedies in human history. And it was a real bad call. And I think that game has a lot of problems, and I definitely think the series after it has way more. But that arc works for me.
So your point is that you do like bad characters, or not bad characters, but like characters that are shitty that the game recognizes or the work recognizes are not good people.
Right. I think there's a way to write that, but like, I don't know, like, so like Kratos's conflict in that game is sort of like trying to come to terms with the crimes he's committed, and he's trying to come to terms with them through the like the lens of like, oh, obviously I need the divine. And the game's conclusion is, fucking no, you don't. You need to realize what you've done sucks and think about that for a long goddamn time. I don't know what message, like, I guess I didn't watch long enough, but it's sort of like, I didn't feel like Ray was going on any kind of journey. He was just sort of a piece of shit.
He kind of is. I guess an important thing for us to do when we start a homework segment by being like, I hated the thing, is to break down, like, what, so the things that you like, we've talked about the things that you like.
Have we?
Well, okay. What, I'm trying to phrase this in a way that I can get an answer out of you.
I'm trying to cooperate here.
Yeah. No, you are. I'm trying to ask the right questions.
I see.
Because I'm trying to learn about where your tastes are and to accomplish my goal as the homework giver of getting you to appreciate something outside of that taste, range.
Mm-hmm.
So it sounds like you are okay with, you like God of War, and you liked that version of Kratos and that story and the way that it's told.
Yeah, I wonder how I'd feel going back to it, but, you know.
Sure, but there was a period of your life where you were like, this is an A-okay, this is a well-told, anti-hero story.
Yeah.
What movies do you like? What films that you've seen that you can remember elicited a, like, good, a positive emotional response in you?
I liked Usual Suspects. I like Dr. Strangelove. I like Ferris Bueller. I don't know. I've got lame, basic taste.
Oh, Usual Suspect. Honey Bunny.
I'm not saying it's good. It's just a fun movie.
I agree, I guess. I watched the movie in a film class recently, and I was like, why is this film? Why did I like this? And it's because when you're a dude in your teens, the internet tells you that there are like 25 movies that you have to like, or else you're not a real film person, and that was one of them. Huh. That's just that's kind of a truth. Like Fight Club, same idea.
Yeah. I didn't like Fight Club as much, but...
Okay. Yeah. I definitely was, like, forcing myself to like that movie when I was younger. But In Bruges, I saw when I was, like, into my own, able to, like, form opinions about films, and I was able to be like, okay, these guys suck, but they're going on a journey, and it's a very beautiful film, and there is, like, stuff to learn about, retributive justice, and also, like, what can you be forgiven for? Like, I think the religious angle and the fact that the person that he killed, well, that was, like, in a church, if I'm not mistaken, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There is, as a person who somewhat identifies as religious, like, I find all of that. Like, what can you be forgiven for, and how do you get, in your day-to-day life, forgiven for something terrible like that? I find all that stuff really compelling.
I guess the thing that, like, for stories like this to connect with me, I feel like I need something to get traction on, right? Mm-hmm. And I didn't feel like there was any part of Ray that I related to. Like, with Kratos, like, I don't relate to him.
Oh my god, I thought you were going to say you relate to Kratos.
No, like, I don't relate to him being a piece of shit, or I don't relate to him, like, trying to get, like, all, like, invested in the divine. Spoilers, I'm not religious myself. Mm-hmm. But, like, I did relate to him being, like, this shit went bad, and I'm looking for an easy way to feel better about it. Like, oh, okay. I can understand that basic concept, right?
Yeah, that makes sense.
Ray didn't want to feel better, but he also didn't seem like he was willing to really take himself to task, except for a few moments where he was really over the top about it. Mostly he's lashing it out at other people for it in a way that I just, like, I don't know. I don't connect to that. Like, he's fucking, like, picking fights with random tourists for no fucking reason. It's just like, why are you doing this? Why are you like this? I can't connect to it.
Yeah.
Why are you, you know, a bigot? Things like this.
It's the first act of a 3-act movie also. Like,
yeah. Yeah, fair enough.
Yeah. That's fair though. I appreciate that. I don't mean to sound like I'm pressing too hard. I just like to learn.
No, of course.
About my co-host.
Well, and also, I mean, this is a homework segment. We can't, like, even just on an entertainment front, we can't get away with, here's the plot of the movie, I didn't like it. How was the DM?
Yeah.
that doesn't
plug
work.
Zone. Like.
Yeah.
No, I like learning. That's my goal here, is to learn, like, what can I recommend you in the future that you would like, even beyond, outside of doing the Garnet Wager.
Mm-hmm.
Because recommending things to your friends is the most fun.
Yeah, I guess my big thing would be, if you're going to do protagonists who are not likable, I need some way to gain traction with them. I need some way to feel at least sympathetic or interested in their plight. And, like, you know, I'm sure you did, so that maybe isn't super helpful with Ray. But to me, it was just sort of like, he's just this shit person. So.
It's also just the final statement. Like, it's one of those, weird value judgments where, like, I can keep telling you, like, you have to judge the film as a whole, but, like, you did sit down and watch 30-plus minutes of this movie. I can't discount the 30 minutes that you didn't enjoy as, like, oh, yeah. It doesn't matter unless you've seen the whole thing.
Like, well, and I'm not, like, I don't think at any point of this I've said this was a bad movie, and I'm not going to.
You're saying I don't think finishing this movie is worth my time.
I'm saying I was having a bad time and I wanted to do something else.
Yeah.
And, like, I don't know, I rented it from YouTube. I guess I have, like, 16 more hours. Maybe I'll finish it. I didn't in time for this podcast. I didn't want to. Maybe I'll turn it back on. I don't know.
What I'm saying is, I spent $6 on Blade Runner 2049, and I kind of regretted those $6.
Yeah.
So sometimes you put something in, and it's like, I don't know. It's less that I regret the $6, and more that I regret the 3 hours that I spent watching that film.
Yeah. Yeah, I can understand.
It's not a bad film, for what it's worth. I thought it was fine before someone jumps at me, but it's like, I could have done something better than stay up until 3 in the morning watching fucking the bad, like the less good Blade Runner movie.
Mm-hmm.
Anyways.
All right. Well, let's get into our deathmatch then, Alan. Oh, I'm going to give you, so this is our first use of the Garnet scale. I'm still going to give you one Garnet for that because you did at least try to push me outside. Like, and I didn't like the movie, but I didn't like hate it. Like if I'd really hated this movie, I would have messaged you being like, so we say 30 minutes, but like, is 15 okay? There's a scenario where I really dislike this movie more. And you did try to push me outside of my comfort zone, so I'll give you a Garnet for that.
I appreciate that. I mean, that's a good use of the system.
Yeah. So, our deathmatch, what are we playing this week, Alan?
Hi, we're playing the Image Game.
Do you want to explain the rules for the Image Game?
I do. So, contrary to most of the... contrary to all of the DMs before this one, well, except Rock, Paper, Scissors, this game includes everybody in it. Everybody is playing. All the players are playing. Everybody gets 6 images and a die in a box. The DM players, the two of them, it's Yunji and Yurim, are testers. Each of them also gets images in a box. And what they do is they have to select one of their pictures, place it face down on a table, and then they describe it with a short phrase, like a word, usually. The idea is that you are both reading the other tester's mind and trying to find a card that matches, and also like playing to the table and trying to be descriptive and cooperative with one word.
Yeah, so the game, I feel like the main challenge of the game, as it's laid out, is like you need to give a clue that... like the non-DM contestants are going to get and are going to guess correctly, or at least one of them is, but that the other player, the other DM contestant will not get. You need to sort of split this difference. And how do you do that?
And it goes kind of weirdly. I know you mentioned before that your first impression was like, this is kind of complicated.
Yeah.
I sort of agreed with that. It took me a while to get it. Once I broke it down to like, oh, this is just multifaceted memory, or not only memory, but like mind reading and just like basic prediction. There isn't much else to it.
I feel like it's a game that like you see it played and you're like, oh, I get it. But if you just hear like the list of directions as to how to play, like this is the first time I've been listening to the rules for a main match or death match. And I just stopped writing the rules down. I was just like, trying to describe it with rules, I cannot wrap my mind around it. It's a game you have to see played, and then it makes sense.
Yeah, because it flows really fast. Or it seems to for us. I think this was also one of the first times where the deathmatch is going at like a healthy pace. It seems like Yurim is losing a lot of garnets really fast. There's like hemorrhaging garnets early on. But they tie up eventually and things seem to be going fine. And then, I forget often that we are not seeing entire games, when we watch this show. But eventually, you know, things are going normally and we don't know how, Yunji seems to be doing so well. And she goes, oh, can we just double up? Like, this is taking too long. Can we have all the bets be worth twice as much and the penalties be worth twice as much, rather?
Mm-hmm.
And
Yurim suggests
like, sure.
That, and Yinji's like, okay, sure. So the dealer agrees.
Yurim has nothing to lose except the game, and Yunji is trying to end it quickly, because her strategy is essentially foolproof. We learn that she is playing under the table, essentially, when showing cards, or showing her picks to, I believe it's Sungyu?
Yes.
Who was then also sharing them with Songmin?
So, yeah, the way it's working is, like, so first we get the reveal that Yunji is basically doing little hand signs to indicate numbers to Sungyu, really subtly. It's like, oh, man, that's screwed up. But then there's the secondary reveal that Songmin is also in on it, and he's just, like, his job is to never pick the right one.
Right.
So that he can lead Yurim astray. And it's a moment of, like, at first you're like, wait, what? Like, Songmin said he was going to help Yurim out. Why? like, why is it going this way? And it looks like the game is just going to be open and shut, but then Yurum starts to claw back into it because Jinho, who has said he's going to help Yurum and actually is, starts watching people's card movements and kind of counting cards
yeah.
like he did before and is like, okay, it has to be one of these. I don't know, it's kind of this crazy, like, pile-up of everybody's different schemes to game the game, right?
It's totally like everyone's using their special ability. Yunji is able to cooperate with people and, like, manage her alliances really well, and Sungyu can, like, respond to hand signals and know how to play his part in a grand scheme, and Songmin knows how to play different sides of the conflict. Like, everybody's doing, and Jinho is using strategy and numbers to manipulate the game.
Mm-hmm.
It is like a culmination of so much of the season. It's like, wow, everybody has developed their talent and now we're going to all use them at the same time. And like the game itself hardly matters. So that's why by the second half of the DM, like the last 10 minutes of the episode, I was just like, I don't even care who's like, I need to know who's winning, but there are like so many things going on under the table that it doesn't even matter. Like what people are playing anymore.
Yeah. Yeah, because, I mean, you know, we got to the point where most of the clues are just incoherent nonsense, because the clues don't matter.
Yeah, it's
people
just
are
like...
laying down a card, yeah, and saying sparkly, or just saying me, and then you flip over the cards, and they're all, like, you know, just, like, various thinking statues, and you're like, okay.
And then...
thinking emoji, you're a thinking emoji, got it.
I knew it all along, that's the twist. And then the best clue, simple, very simple.
Indeed. Yeah, I wrote that one down too. Shout out to Exhibition Cha. I hope you're in season two. I hope you come back.
I'm trying to remember if there was any other funny ones. I think that was the most of them.
Yeah, I didn't tend to write them down. But yeah, it's just... So Yunji's schemes end up being superior to Yurum, who's, you know, got Jinho and is scrambling to put it together. It's kind of an interesting dynamic because this is actually something that I have experienced myself. You remember that I was in, one of those genius orcs before, right?
Correct.
So I went into a death match, with a partner, and I was like, okay, like, here's what we're gonna do. And I actually played surprisingly well. I got smoked. And I found out later that the reason I got smoked is because the other team had signals and they were doing signals.
Oh, shit.
And we were just playing the game. And we were playing it pretty well, but it's just like, nope, didn't matter. Like, signals beat no signals, you know? And, it felt really relatable because I think there's this tendency sometimes of people to, like, to overthink the game part of the game.
Mm-hmm.
And I definitely think Yurum would be the type of person to do this where she's like, oh no, like, I'm a professional pool player. Like,
right.
I'm used to, like, working within the rules of the game and pulling out a victory and thinking about the strategies. Whereas Yunji, like, she's not a professional, like, competitor of any sort. So she's just like, no, how do I make this game not a game?
Right. How do I take one step out of the game into alliance management and just win without even having to play? It's a completely opposite way of playing. Yeah.
Yeah. And it was pretty awesome to watch.
It pays off very well that the game ends summarily. Also, Jinho's tactic immediately shut down when the dealers are like, we are shuffling the cards. And he's like, well, or we're like resetting the numbers.
Yeah.
And they're like, fuck, okay, I guess, all right. And then she loses, and it's sad.
Mm-hmm.
I thought she was a little bit mean when she left. In that scene where she's walking out, and Sungyu is like, well, is it, I think Yurum is talking to Sungyu when she's leaving.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And she's just like, he's like, I'm going to miss you. Like, thanks for being around. She's like, no. No.
I don't know, it doesn't seem any more mean than some of the previous ones. Like when Songmin eliminated Jung Moon and went to be like, oh, I'm sorry, and go for the hug, and she ducked away and said, get away from me. I mean, like, I don't know.
True, true. They get to be a little bit much when they're walking out the door. That's fine.
Yeah, especially to the person who took them down.
Ooh, yeah, you know? Exactly. To that person. Because she's even nice to Yunji.
Yeah.
She's like, you know, you played a great game. I liked working with you. I liked working against you. I had a lot of fun. Like, thank you.
Mm-hmm. But Sungyu picked her for the DM and then worked against her in the DM. And it's like, yeah, I can understand some salt in the moment.
Yeah,
you know?
Absolutely. And then she has that fantastic line right as she leaves where she's like, oh, of course I didn't write this line down. She says, like, I got to go out in a, I got to die a beautiful death instead of an unfortunate death or something.
She said, I chose beautiful defeat over ugly victory.
That's the one.
Yeah.
Thank you. I don't know how to
I didn't write that down, but it stuck with me, so.
Yeah, it's a good line.
She was rad. It's a bummer that she has to go. I don't know. Every time Yunji's back is up against a wall, I feel like we see some side of her that we haven't before, and that's really exciting. But I still almost wish Yurim had stayed. I don't know. These are all strong players.
That's the Dota player in you. These are all strong players.
The Dota player in me. I shouldn't. The Dota player in me would say something different that I'm not going to say right now.
Okay, would say GG.
The Dota player in me would be like, fucking easy mid, goddamn.
Oh, yuck. I don't want to see that character come out.
I'm kidding.
You have a Dota podcast for that.
I do, and I'm respectful on my Dota podcast.
Oh, wow.
In this house. Competition.
One of those good clap tweets. No, she leaves. I think I was going to say just everybody left is good. There is nobody left who I would not be happy, like who I would not be a little bit sad if they let money leave. We made some bets, yeah. Also.
We did. So you bet that Songmin was going to win this main match, and I'm afraid he didn't, so I'm going to be taking 5 garnets from you.
Fair
on
enough.
That one. But you also made another wager, didn't you?
I did. I made a secret wager because I'm super smart. I messaged Six while I was watching this episode a couple minutes ago. Over an hour ago now, and I was like, I think I know who's going to get eliminated. And from the beginning of the episode, I just had this intuition. I think it has to do with, like, it's partly
the
around...
or something?
The
editing or something?
Either the editing or just, like, sometimes you just get the sense from watching the pace of the game, like, it's time for this person to go. I don't know why. I just said it has to be either a Yunji or Yurim. One of them has to go. And I was like waffling on whether or not to make that bet. And then they were both in the DM and I was like, I'm putting my bet down. It's one of the, I'm going to tell you which one of these two it is. And again, I waffled back and forth. And I put, what was it? 8 garnets?
Yes.
I put down 8 garnets that, Yurim was going to be eliminated. Mostly because of Yunji's performance in the main match. Where I was like, yeah, she's okay. Like her just like conversation and the alliances that she was working with. I was like, yeah, she's, you know, I'll give her this victory. I'll think she'll win this one. And I was right.
Mm-hmm.
So
you were.
Sometimes things work out. Hand them over. Thank you. Yum, yum, yum.
Yep. No problem.
And, do we want to make any wagers for next week?
So let's establish where we're at, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, our totals for garnets right now, Alan has 76. Six has 84.
Oh, man.
So you're closing that gap, as they say.
We're 8
only
garnets.
8 apart now, yeah.
What is the next game called?
I don't know.
You know what? I'm going to find out for you, Six, because I'm... I try to be a good co-host. I'm not going to say I'm a good co-host, but I try. And I like to definitely not stall for time while I look things up, like the fact that the next game is called Expression Auction.
What?
Expression Auction.
Auction. I thought you said Expression Oxygen. And I was like, what the fuck does that mean?
Sorry, I forgot how to words for a second there. We have 4 episodes left. The next one, S1E9, is Expression Auction.
Well, if this refers to facial expressions, then Kyungran is going to lose.
No, Jinho is going to lose. Are you kidding? You want to put some money on this?
I mean, Kyungran is established, like, she has gone on the record being like, hey, I don't have any kind of poker face.
Yeah, but Jinho has also said, I don't know how to make faces.
That'll be great. That means he'll be really good at it.
Again, assuming the game works the way you think it does.
Okay, how about I will bet you 10 garnets.
Yes.
That. Gosh.
Oh my God.
I don't even know what I'm betting. You propose something. I don't have any ideas.
We don't even know if it's like a win or loser thing, or if it's a winning team, losing team.
Okay, how about we each bet 5 against the bank?
Okay.
So I'll bet 5 that Jin-ho is going to be a winner, and you can bet 5 that Kyung-ran is going to be a winner? Is that what we're betting?
Yes.
Okay. Okay.
Let's write that down somewhere so we don't forget.
I always do.
Love it. Delicious. Not the adjective I was looking for. My brain is farting internally now. Hey! Looks like my brain's out of battery, Six.
Oh, you better plug it back in. It's the blog alarm! You set me up for that one. That's not even... I didn't even get you.
Welcome to the genius. My name is Six. I like banana sandwiches.
You know, I haven't had a banana sandwich in quite some time.
That'll be your next homework. All right. Plug zone. Six, plug your stuff. You never plug first. Plug first.
Okay.
please. I'm sorry.
No, it's fine. So if you want to find me on social media, I am on that Twitterscape. You can find me at SixDetmar, SixDetmar. Comments and questions about The Genius that aren't spoilers or about this podcast, those are welcome. I had a correction. There's a correction. See, this is from a little ways back. You remember when we were talking about Murders in the Rue Morgue by Edgar Allan Poe?
I do.
And we talked about how he must have read some real trashy, you know, detective fiction and wanted to make some of that?
Yes.
He made detective fiction.
Yeah.
That story is like the first, like, detective story.
Did I not say that?
You actually kind of said the opposite.
Oh, that he tried it and stopped?
That he was doing a take on a genre that already existed, when in fact he kind of established the genre.
No, yeah, I did establish partway through that came before Sherlock Holmes.
Yeah.
I guess I just forgot to mention that. Yeah, that character, that's like his Sherlock Holmes. Like, he's a character who comes back in multiple different stories. That's true.
Mm-hmm.
But the
detective fiction genre is kind of was codified by that story and by Edgar Allan Poe.
The Gorilla Murder.
Indeed. Yeah, no, what started with a bang, let's say. Mm-hmm. Anyway, back to plugs. You can find me on a couple of podcasts. There's a Dota podcast, that's Bottle Crow Reborn, we're weekly. There is Neutral Game, that's a monthly visual novel podcast with an episode coming up this week. Might be out by the time we're posting this, I'm not sure. There's a Neutral Game, that's a fighting game podcast that comes out every month. And then there is Oops All Anime, which is the weekly patron-only anime podcast where we try out anime with various guests. You can find that on our Patreon. That's patreon.com/scanlinemedia. You can also check that out for other stuff. We do some writing. It's me and my friend Jen, mostly. It's good stuff. Succinct plug zone.
I love it.
What about you, Alan?
Thank you. I'm Alan.
I was going to see how long you would wait.
I was like, I need to be teed up. I refuse to just jump in. Oh my God, I'm doing, my brain. You can find me on Twitter at Alan Ibrahim, spelled AllenIbrahim. Please follow me. I love having Twitter followers. I want to blow up. I want to have like 3,000 followers. That's not true. Please don't send like a million followers at me. You can also listen to me on 2 other podcasts. Just 2. 1 is Fireside Friends. It's a monthly pop culture discussion podcast where me and my friends Ryan and Katie talk about our lives and how pop culture affects us, and then we choose a thing and we talk about it in depth. The other podcast I'm on is Chats, a television podcast. Currently, we are starting season 3 of The Newsroom, the really bad Aaron Sorkin show, and we talk about it every week, 2 episodes at a time. We have some very spicy, exciting things planned for Chats coming very soon. We're also going to be announcing our next show soon, so definitely check that show out if you're interested in my brand and my shows.
Nice.
I think that's a garnet wager.
We did forget to mention one thing.
Oh, yes, please.
So as the credits roll, it is established why Songmin helped Yoonji out.
Yes.
he was making it up to Sungyu for screwing Sungyu over in the main match.
Wah, wah. That's the thing
Will
that
be
you told
enough?
Me earlier. That you were like, Alan, you were an idiot. You messed this up.
You Will that it. Be enough to mend their relationship? We'll have to find out.
Dun, dun.
Next time. This is not... No, you can't. That one's copyrighted. We can't Law and Order this.
All right, let's play it in reverse. Unk, unk.
Peace out.
Bye.